I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, Episode 42. BBC Sherlock, Cumberbatch Returns.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became astronomer.
In a world where it's always 1895, comes I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we discuss goings-on in the world of Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts, the Baker Street irregulars, and popular culture related to the great detective.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Burt Walder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Ah, yes, it's all about timing, and something that we're going to talk about this very episode is very timely indeed. But before we get into all of that interesting stuff, let's do the business. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Monty.
I'm the other host. I'm Burt Walder.
And together, we're here to welcome you to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast for Sherlock Holmes devotees where it's always 1895. And we have a couple of sponsors.
Hallelujah.
Yes, indeed. Some very enthusiastic sponsors. Our longtime sponsor, the Wessex Press, for all of those pressing Wessex needs.
Yes, we're going to come up with a new catchphrase.
I know. Awesome. But if I were in need of some Wessi, that's a new one, right?
That's very good.
If I were in need of some Wessi, what would I be in need of?
Well, you'd be in need of the latest information, the complete compilation of everything that has anything to do with Conan Doyle's play, The Adventure of the Speckled Band, or just The Speckled Band.
Indeed. And if I were new to this whole Sherlockian scholarship genre, I would go and pick myself up a copy of Ronald Knox and Sherlock Holmes, The Origins of Sherlockian Studies, the book that actually gets to the beginnings of how it is we got into the game and what started all of this fun that we're having, including the stuff that we do here on the air.
Yes, and that's a lovely transition to the Baker Street Journal, which is our other sponsor, which is also the...
It's behind such organizations as the Baker Street Irregulars.
Yes, I remember them.
The BSJ, as we call it, a take on the Wall Street Journal, of course, is a quarterly publication, an irregular quarterly publication. Not that it's irregular in its timing, but it certainly is irregular via its publishers, the BSI. This is the scholarly journal that started it all. Of course, if you're on the other side of the pond, or really international, there's another journal as well. But each of them, and certainly first and foremost the BSJ, is chock full of Sherlockian scholarship that comes out every single quarter. It includes cartoons, includes some wonderful reviews of books. The editor there certainly gets his fill of material. Reports out from some of the societies out there. Lots of great material, chock full in every single issue of the BSJ. You can find it at bakerstreetjournal.com. I believe they're on Twitter. It's at BakerSTJournal on Twitter.
Oh, very good.
Well, and our friends at Wessex Press, of course, wessexpress.com. We will have links to both of our sponsors on iHearOfSherlock.com. And, of course, we also link to them via our Facebook page, I Hear of Sherlock on Facebook. So check us and our sponsors out. And if you do make a purchase from any of our sponsors, please let them know that you heard about them on our show. It helps fill them with certitude that they're doing the right thing by supporting our show. And it helps us by continuing these relationships.
Yeah, and it's just a wonderful, irregular dose of astonishment and surprise to them. So, which is something we never tire of.
Indeed. And speaking of astonishment and surprise, Bert,
Yes.
I believe you have a little field trip that you're going to tell us about.
Yes, I hear of Sherlock went into the field this past Wednesday, the 2nd of May. Public television in the United States had a launch event for the second season of the BBC Sherlock, featuring appearances by Rebecca Eaton, who manages the Masterpiece program, which is the vehicle by which Sherlock is presented in the United States, Stephen Moffat, and Sue Virtue, the producer, and also Benedict Cumberbatch, and we were there. And here is our on-the-scene report. Popular culture is a lot like a river, and many people in their teen years or their 20s are in it waist deep. And regardless of where you're standing, observing the flow or actually in the water, it's not easy to see where it's all going. But every so often, something comes along like a waterfall. It's a big change, and it's hard to miss.
Right now, and again in the second half of our show, ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
And you can feel it as the culture shifts beneath your feet. Well, the first suggestion of another seismic shift in popular culture came on East 59th Street in Manhattan on Wednesday, May 2nd.
I'm going to make a really good for you people. And he's got a microphone that might freak out just a tad. But, okay, there is one line and one line only for Sherlock, whether you have RSVP'd or whether you are on the standby list. Stay in this line. We will begin to open the doors in a few minutes.
Yes.
At that time, we'll let people in who have RSVP'd and are on the list. If you have not, please stay in the line as it moves forward, okay? When you go inside, there's a standing cocktail reception, so no big rush. We will, about a few minutes before 7, we'll open the doors to the theater. Then we'll reassess how many extra seats we have. And at that point, we'll come out and we'll start letting standby folks in. I cannot guarantee that you are going to receive a seat, but what I would suggest is you stay in line. It will probably only be another maybe 30 to 40 minutes before we'll know for sure. So if it were me, I would wait and see if I could get a ticket. I think there's a good possibility.
Hundreds of fans, mostly young, mostly women, came from around the country and outside the United States to line up for a preview of the second season of Sherlock.
My name is C. Little, and I came from Columbus, Ohio to be here, which was a 10-hour drive.
So when did you leave this morning?
About 6 a.m.
Oh, my goodness. And when did you first encounter the BBC Sherlock?
Actually, only a couple months ago. I was kind of late on the boat, but I've been a Sherlock Holmes fan for many years, aside from the series.
And you've come with your friend?
Yes, hi.
And you're also from Columbus?
Yeah, we're both from Columbus. I'm Kira Scott, and I really like the Sherlock Holmes show. It's pretty good. It's a nice modern update.
And were you late to the boat too, or did you get in on it early?
I don't know. I think I watched it on Netflix actually, so probably a little late.
and when you, have you read any of the Sherlock Holmes stories? Did you know the character before you saw the BBC show?
I've read all the stories.
When did you first read the Sherlock Holmes stories?
Probably 10 or 11, pretty young.
That's great. So that would be what, like fifth grade?
Probably thereabouts.
Yeah, that was when I read it, too. And you?
I've read The Hounds of Baskerville. I always pronounce it wrong. It's been a while, so I haven't read them all.
Oh, you haven't? That's great. Well, but you've got a lot of stories to look forward to.
That's true.
I'm Laura Hodges.
Hi, Laura. And where do you come from?
New Jersey.
Oh, great. Yeah. So you did not, you don't get the contest for the longest drive.
No, not at all.
And when did you first encounter Sherlock Holmes?
In general or the series?
Let's start with the series.
The series, I want to say in January or February, like of this year.
And before that, you knew the character? You'd read the stories?
I hadn't read the stories, but like I knew about it. I'd seen other adaptations of it. So,
So you're looking forward to the second season?
I've already seen it.
But we can't. But it's a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
We can't say anything.
Right. I know.
Well, you know something unusual is happening when hundreds of young people cheer once we're inside the auditorium for an opening PBS video featuring Downton Abbey and the PBS NewsHour. Cheers for the opening remarks from journalist Steven Sigaler, who is the head of programming for WNET in New York.
I get a certain sense of anticipation. And I share it. Now, although I'm an Englishman and I've been around a long time, I am not Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I am, in fact, Steven Sigaler, Vice President of Programming at WNET, Channel 13. Yeah! What we do is we bring this kind of great programming that you've just seen a glimpse of, or a lot of glimpses of, to our viewers through 13.
Well, more screams and cheers accompanied the first 35 minutes of Scandal in Belgravia, after which the screen rose and Rebecca Eaton and Stephen Moffat and Sue Vertu came on stage.
Doctor Who. saying all this stuff. You know him so well. And did you know that he was one of the writers on Tintin? Well, yes, he did other things. So. And sitting next to me is what's his name? Benedict Cumberbatch, too. Recently was awarded the Olivier. Olivier. He performs in Frankenstein at the National Theater. He, of course, is also in Star Trek. He also was in War Horse, Tinker Tailor. Yes. And seen on the screen on Masterpiece in Island at Small Island and
what's the name?
The two people who are not with us are sadly Mark Gatiss, the co-creator with Stephen Sherlock. And Dr. Watson. Is in New Zealand. I only have one thing to say, then I will shut up, and the only thing I'll say is that's enough, we have to go, and however long we have here. But I just want to tell you, so you will be the first to hear, that Masterpiece will be co-producing with BBC Wales and with Hartswood Films the next series of Sherlock, which will go into production early in 2013 and will be on the air here sometime in 2013. We've got to go. It's been awesome. So I think what we better do is open this up for questions. So please direct your questions.
And here are some of the questions and answers from the evening. The question and answer part of the program went on for close to an hour. And among the questions the audience had for the cast, the producer and the writer, and Rebecca Eaton, were whether or not Machiavelli, the study of Machiavelli, inspired any aspect of the Holmes character, what the favorite scenes that the actors and writers had, the involvement of Paul McGuigan, the director, his unique contribution to the overall feel of the production. Was it intimidating to play Sherlock Holmes when so many actors have essayed the character? If you had a blank check, to do anything, what would you do? Benedict Cumberbatch had an interesting answer. He's very eager to take the book Cavalier and Clay and to turn that into a film. It was a question that came up about the American version of Sherlock. Cumberbatch was asked what his feeling about the theater was, if he planned to go back to the theater. When did Benedict Cumberbatch first meet the character of Sherlock Holmes? Was there a backstory about the early days of Holmes and Mycroft? And what would you do if you woke up with Sherlock Holmes' powers? Well, in the interest of time, I have, and there were many other questions that all had to do with members of the audience and their deep affection and connection to Benedict Cumberbatch. So in the interest of time, I've cut that down to about 20 minutes. Here is the best of the questions and answers with Stephen Moffat, Sue Virtue, Rebecca Eaton, and Benedict Cumberbatch.
I did read a lot. I've mainly read the Sherlock Holmes stories. And I'm not being flippant. I know exactly what you mean. There is a lot of calculation done, so, but it is all there in the original. It's what Colonel Doyle wrote. It's what Colonel Doyle saw as well as more interested in. And how that formulates into something that then obviously is going to be playable and then, you know, translatable into the 21st century. I'm very well fed by an enormously brilliant script, both by Nick Martin and Stephen Gillis. So I didn't need to research the type. The type was very clear to see for me. That says more about me than But I might have to revisit that. I did read that at school.
I read Machiavelli for fun.
Don't want to talk about your problems.
For three of you, what are your favorite, or what have been your favorite scenes in the Sherlock series? I guess you can, I mean, since most of us have seen the second series, but you don't have to spoil it. Favorite scenes, either to write, to act in, to film, etc. Thank you.
Well, I do love the scene in Buckingham Palace. I love seeing the rear end of Sherlock. Of Laura Pulver.
Golly, it's really hard to choose. It's different as well, because there's the ones that are really hard to do that are really enjoyable to watch, and all of them are slightly weird to watch. I get very nervous in my own audience. I can sit back and still enjoy it, and it's wonderful to have been able to vicariously enjoy it through your enjoyment today. I go back and stand behind the screen at the beginning of that if you need. It's a cheeky way of just seeing what the reaction is going to be, and I don't know, I'm not being specific. I mean, I do really like the when she takes me back through the deduction in when I pass out and I'm not getting it. I kind of like to see him compromise every now and again. I know there are legal pyrotechnics of him being in control of what we love and everything. It's a strong hero, but it's a beautiful thing when he's been led by the hand into something unexpected. And I like that one. There are other moments in other episodes which I do like. It was extraordinary, and there were gnats biting our heads, and we had so little time to do it, and it worked the first time, and it got a round of applause from the crew. So we rushed back to have a look at that. And it's a bit of magic dreamt up by Paul McGuigan.
Yeah,
he's very much missing
it. Paul McGuigan is the director.
Yeah, and really the inventor of a lot of the visual vernacular that Stephen possibly even defined as something new. And I should have been talking about that, I'm so sorry, I'm not making any sense. What I'm trying to say is stuff like the text floating on screen, that was his idea. The rich tapestry of colour and wallpaper and the way he places objects within the frame and the cutting, the editing, him and Charlie dreamt up these brilliant ideas, such as in the first series, these wipes and swipes you have where one scene would just come across another rather than fading out and cutting to another scene, that two different places at the same time would lead into the same screen. We owe him an awful lot, and yeah, it's a shame he's not here. We would love the reaction he gave.
No, apparently we have two mics, so.
Hello. I have a question for both Benedict and Stephen. Do you find it intimidating at all to kind of have your own version of Sherlock Holmes, as there's so many? I mean, Arthur Conan Doyle's version, of course, is a classic, and it's got to be intimidating for you to see a regular modern-day version. And for you, Benedict, is it intimidating because there's so many actors that have and will play Sherlock in the future?
What would be an opportunity to go around feeling intimidated? No, you get it. And you know, if he made a complete mess of it, at least there'd be loads of other versions of Sherlock. There's like spares. It's just the best fun. So I mean, you can do
it's a treat, it's a privilege to be asked to play that character. So you know, you can't be intimidated by it, you've just got to grab it by the ones and have fun.
You should have seen this before the first episode went out.
Terrifying.
Exposed the lie of that.
Wonderful literature. And that's my question. My question is, if someone were to hand you a blank check, and you're suddenly given a blank check, you could do whatever project you want and whatever role you'd like to have in it, producing, directing, starring, whichever we have time for, can I ask what that project would be and why?
If it was a blank check, I'd do more than one. But
retire.
it'd be nice to do a film show. But I there's a very good book called Cabinet and Clay. I'm not. to this thing.
That's
cool. Better talk to him about writing.
And Stephen, in
your
life,
my blank check. Oh, this is a tragedy. If I were given a blank check, I would have coped. And you know the answer. Been doing Sherlock Holmes and Doctor Who.
No, we've heard nothing more about it. I know they've made a pilot. It's nothing to do with us at all.
Nothing.
No.
And we don't necessarily wish it for death, right?
As we already know with the Danny G movie franchise, there's only one for two, so why not three?
Yeah, but it's working for it.
Take away the love for us, and there's no reason to be selfish with that. Johnny
Lee Miller, of course, was also in France.
Okay. I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia. I drove up here for this event. I wanted to ask. Well, first of all, congratulate you on your recent Olivier Award win. Do you have current plans to return to the theater? Is that a passion for you, or are you going to stick to TV and movies with your schedule?
I haven't left the theater. I will always do theater. I like to mix it up. I'm really genuinely hoping to bring back this time. Yeah, Danny, I know it's always been talks. I love this, it's where I began, and while I owe it an awful lot, I of course have incredible breaks in both the other mediums, so it's a monologue practice where you can start almost succeed at any level in any medium. So the usual trajectory of classical roles into small parts and television, blah, blah, blah. A little bit of that I've done, I still feel equally loyal to all of them, so I'll never give up on this.
Great, thank you so much.
I guess to go with that question, I had a question for
for Benedict, at what point in your life were you first exposed to Sherlock Holmes's novels, and how did that affect your character? But then for all of you, what is, in terms of like the extent to which you collaborate on how far one actor can go with his or her role, and you know the collaboration and the push and pull in terms of the whole process?
I to be honest, it was Jeremy Brett's interpretation. That's the first sort of conscious memory I have of both of Sherlock and what one of the Sherlock Holmes was. Really masterful, and that's Rathbone as well. And I probably read them when I was 14, something like that. Weirdly enough, I had the Hobbit read to me before that, but anyway, that was probably the beginning of my interest in this. And then I didn't obsess it, but I wasn't a massive fanboy of it. I came to it very much through being asked to consider the idea of doing more than Sherlock, and then I just, as I have, went on that thing. So, I can't remember the second part of your question.
At what point do all of you collaborate?
Oh, every day on set. I mean, you know, there's a brilliant. Is that, we have read-throughs, and obviously we have the first series, which Stephen saw our strengths in, and I think both him and Mark and the other Stephen, as he keeps confronting me, wrote. We should put it up. Steve Thompson wrote. I think all right to our strengths, and you saw a relationship burgeoning between just a friendship really between myself and Una. You didn't know that we'd know. Una's known me since I was a baby. She had her sons around about a bit before, but knew my mother when she was pregnant with me, and so it's over my life. So there was a sort of something for nothing intimacy that we had through that history, and he just saw how well we got on, on the other side of the set. And I think that was part of what amped up the relationship between Holmes and Mrs. Hudson in the series. Isn't that right? I'm boring you. It's a very collaborative, wonderful group of actors, so it's very easy to have a push and pull, if you like.
But even with the director and...
Of course, and a lot's dictated by time and the foresight of his shot, storyboarding, his shot list when he's done one. And weather and all the other things that dictate all the vagaries of filming. So within those constraints, yes, of course, we play, we try variations. So there's a great scene in Reich and Butler. Martin is berating a police officer. I'm not describing it. He's berating. So there's one place I'm off the road. And he was improvising the scene, and it was great, and it was just a great scene. I'm telling you, complete sort of free range of feel. And every take is different, it was great fun. And we try and vary as much as we possibly can. And we've known each other for two series now, so we pipe each other very easily, and it's great fun.
I have a question for Benedict and Stephen. One of the things that characterizes the home stories is that we know virtually nothing about Sherlock Holmes. And I'm curious if Benedict and Stephen and Mark Gatiss spent any time on the backstory of Sherlock and Mycroft and their antecedents.
That's a good
question. No, not really. I don't think that's how you get it. I don't think that's how you know a character. I don't think you know a character by creating a backstory for them. Never mind not knowing the backstory for Sherlock Holmes, I'm not absolutely sure that I know the backstory of Mark Gatiss. Looking at each other, do you really know the backstory? So we sometimes speculate,
and because we're interested, we chat about what his parents are about, what he did. But you know what? We're not. It's sacred turf. You don't mess that up. You don't bring that into the show. It's not right. There are some things we don't know about Sherlock Holmes, just as there are some things we don't know about our friends, and we don't ever know. And that's right and proper. I think if we went and did something like that, in a way the audience wouldn't believe it. We said, now just make that bit up, like we didn't make the rest of it.
As an actor, it was one of the first questions I asked him, and that's a terrifying response to get, isn't it? You want to put something of an understanding of how you've grown to be this exceptional, eccentric talent. And for me, it was important at least to know it, but like he says, all the best backstories are there, but not talked about. So I have an idea of who he was when he was growing up. I have an idea of how he became what he is as we see him now. We don't necessarily have to show it ever, but it's there, and it does inform the choices I make as an actor, playing this character. And I'd say, yeah, I know Mark's backstory. I agree with Steve, since it's bold to me to explain everything. It would make it so much more boring, but I think it's kind of important to have a little bit of a framework to hang in the choices on this next thing.
Hi, Rebecca. I was wondering, do you, after playing Sherlock, do you deduce things about people that, oh, that guy's totally
I try not to, because I think it's very dangerous. Sorry, is that the end of your question? Sorry.
Oh, no. Also, my friend, who's an amazing artist, yes. She may do something. Oh. And that was just a little fact. Yeah. And it's really awesome.
Oh. Can you share it from there? Or is it too
far? It's very small, but the probably pulls it up.
Question. I was in the middle of an interview today on the phone, and somebody was dialing a number to extend the interview. It was a journalist to talk about the second series, and she put her hand forward, and I saw there were scratches on it, and I saw the pattern, and I went, "Have you been travelling with a cat recently?" She had. The thing is, That's it. That's all it is. You know what I mean? I reached dead ends. It's the phenomenon about it is you can see the dullest detail and weave the most incredible, but sometimes wrong, fabric of story and narrative of it. And it's one of the joys of watching him do that and being in his company for Watson, I think, that drives us through. But I think, it's very tempting. I think we all kind of get our producing heads on. I mean, these guys sweat blood and tears, and they are beautiful, beautiful bits of writing. They are phenomenal.
Yeah, what a phenomenal.
I think it's worth saying that it's kind of a trick. It's Doyle's trick. He makes it sound really, really credible. But the absolute truth is that Sherlock's main power is never, ever getting wrong. He doesn't.
But
you
also have deduction file, don't you? Which
yeah, when we think of one, we
think of one, you just phone up and say,
quick. Yeah, your brain does, yeah, you do start.
When you see something.
It's interesting because I'm actually not a super fan. I'm definitely a fan. And I think
you know the 10,000.
I love Benedict Cumberbatch. I gotta say, you're fantastic in your
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes, and T-Cones are beyond words. My friend with me is the real super fan, and I could not take credit for this question. However, the question sort of builds on what was already asked, which is, if you woke up and you suddenly had those powers of super deduction and amazing sort of perception of the world, would that change your life, and how?
I think you look everywhere and see, you know, a multiple of what is singularly in front of you. Everything suddenly starts to expand from one detail into a whole life history, or at least, you know, immediate circumstances of the history. It would be a blessing to wear easily. I think it's an extraordinary gift, but it must be quite fantastic. Sherlock Holmes works at it incredibly hard. It doesn't. I don't think it always just comes to him. He looks for it. He's trained himself to do that.
Mind you, if you did wake up discovering you'd had that power, you'd be a bloody surprise, wouldn't you?
That is great, great music, isn't it?
It is. It is indeed. A lot of fun. And it sounds like quite an evening there. Lots of screaming fans and lots of emotion running high.
Well, you know, we look back on the death of Sherlock Holmes at the Reichenbach Falls and remember those anecdotes about people wearing black armbands and use that as evidence to the degree to which Holmes captured the public imagination 100 years ago. And the same thing has happened now, except it's not characterized by queuing up for copies of the Strand magazine. It's characterized by absolutely fanatical and enthusiastic and involved and dedicated and emotional fans who have embraced the character, the actor, this production. And one of the reasons why it's so compelling is because of things like the music, as well as the direction and the cinematography and everything they've done to make it so exciting. So there you are.
Well, and of course, the cheekbones. Don't forget the cheekbones.
The cheekbones keep coming up.
But, you know, it's funny because that intro with the band from the other side of the pond reminded me that there are moments in time, I think, when as a culture we show exactly how things are beginning to change. And I think you can go back even a generation before the Beatles and look at Frank Sinatra at the Paramount, right there in New York.
Yeah, it's
same kind of thing. That's where the Bobby Soxers were born.
Yeah.
And they were screaming and fainting and you know, showing true fandom for Sinatra's performance. And, of course, when the Beatles stormed America, you had the same kind of thing. And now this is absolutely fascinating that this is happening around – well, certainly it's around the character Sherlock Holmes. Of course, it's more focused on this particular show, this particular actor. But the degree to which – Sherlock Holmes is being revitalized and brought back into the spotlight is absolutely astounding. And we'll see, you know, a few years from now how this has caught on. I know Gatiss and Moffat, as they were thinking about, you know, airing this show on the BBC, when they bring it over to the U.S., they want to get a much, much bigger splash over here than, you know, any typical PBS show. And I think Downton Abbey has certainly paved the way for that. So we will see on Sunday, May 6th, and the following two Sundays after that, as the show airs in the United States, if, in fact, it gets that same level of reception and of fan devotion.
Oh, I bet it will. And I bet at the end of the series we'll see that same phenomenon, I believe, in Sherlock hitting over here. One of the questions that was asked during that launch event that we've just listened to was, did the group have anything to say about the American series, the CBS series about Sherlock? And
yeah.
Other than the fact that they know a pilot has been done, you know, the team were very clear to point out that they have nothing to do with it at all, and they really didn't know anything about it. But Benedict Cumberbatch was very, very polite and gracious. And the reason for that is that Cumberbatch has just won in Britain an Olivier Award, which is the British equivalent of the Tony Award, the Antoinette Perry Award for theater that is given in the United States. And he won it for his appearance in a magnificent play that I've read about but haven't seen, called Frankenstein. And it is obviously the Frankenstein story. But the unique thing about this particular staging, of which Cumberbatch said two things of great interest, is that at some given point, once a week or every other night or something like that, the actors switch roles. So actor who has been playing the monster plays plays Victor Frankenstein. Right. Yes. And the second interesting thing Cumberbatch said is that his colleague from Frankenstein, Johnny Lee Miller, is playing Holmes, obviously, in the CBS pilot. And so he said, you know, Miller is a mate, and, you know, wish him all the best.
Now, if they could get Lucy Liu to play the Frankenstein monster in that play, that would really be a feat.
Yeah. And Cumberbatch also, you know, was very, very gracious about it. He also said that, you know, there's basically plenty of room for Sherlock Holmes. There's their series, there's the Robert Downey Jr. series, which he mentioned, and, of course, this putative third series. So he was really quite gracious.
Well, that's wonderful. Great to hear.
Well, and could we
I feel a little gassy.
Well,
I do. And I think that means it's time for the editor's gas lamp.
Oh, you may be right. You may be right.
I may be crazy.
Well, yes, you may
be. But it's just the kind of lunatic I'm looking for. Anyway, I thought in looking in seeing that you were at the heart of a wellspring of potential newfound Sherlockians, people who are just discovering this amazing game that we Sherlockians play and may find themselves on the scholarly side. They may move from fans to actual Sherlockians. I thought it was entirely appropriate that we read the latest and greatest Editor's Gas Lamp from the Baker Street Journal, which happens to be one of our sponsors.
What a coincidence.
So here we are, spring 2012, volume 62, number one, the editor's gas lamp titled Consider Yourself at Home. New neighbors are arriving. Once again, the popular zeitgeist has discovered Sherlock Holmes. The two lavish Guy Ritchie movies with their adventure homes and the BBC's modern-day scary smart Sherlock, combined with the easy interchange of the internet, have created an unprecedented popular appreciation of Holmes. This current group of enthusiasts is by far the largest ever seen by those of us who pilgrimage to Baker Street. Beyond anything experienced during the 1970s revival, brought on by the Royal Shakespeare Company's resurrection of William Gillette's Sherlock Holmes, beyond the rising tide caused by the book and movie of The 7% Solution, beyond even the wave of the fans of the Brett years. Many in today's audience are almost aggressively passionate in sharing their affection for Holmes and Watson, and do so in ways unimagined even 10 years ago. The new social media allow international, immediate, and wide-ranging conversation encompassing words and pictures, both moving and still. Those conversing especially appreciate the relationship between Holmes and Watson, or Sherlock and John, as they usually call them, one of literature's greatest friendships. Yes, many are and will remain fans, just like their predecessors, but also like their predecessors, some will stay to become Sherlockians, possibly a larger number than ever before, owing to the size of this newest wave. Already, we are seeing scholarly appreciations for the canon from new perspectives, informed by both the newcomers' enthusiasms and the depth of materials immediately available, courtesy of the internet. Things will change, but it's always 1895. And so we say to all of them, welcome to your new home. We look forward to getting to know you. Getting to know you, getting to know all about you.
Well, we'll need Lara Pulver to sing that in the music,
yes,
in the musical version of Irene. That
we really, good night, Irene.
We really need to write that. Irene the musical.
You know, at one point when I was, I don't know, particularly with a lot of free time, I was working on rewriting the lyrics of some Frank Sinatra songs to a Sherlockian bent.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, and I...
we've got to get together with Henry Boot and figure out how to stage that.
That would be a lot of fun, kind of the Torch Song trilogy, if
so
you
was
will.
It, was it My Way? Was My Way one of them?
Now,
now what I would like to do is do lyrics to My Way, except make it all about Mycroft.
Oh, that would be great.
And why he's so irritating.
See, that's a great one. I think one of the ones I was working on was taking That Old Black Magic and turning it into That Old Black Doggy, referring to the Hound of the Baskerville.
That's got to be You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog. Come on. You can't
do that. You not really a Sinatra song,
though. You got to go to Elvis for that.
Well, I don't know if you recall, but I think it was the year after I received my investiture, I was asked to do the toast to Sherlock Holmes at the BSI dinner. And I sang my toast. And I took the old Sinatra song, The House I Live In, and
oh,
What Is
goodness.
America to Me, right? And I did What Is Sherlock Holmes to Me.
Oh, that's good. I don't remember that. Do you have that recorded anywhere?
I may. I'll have to dig for that.
You should dig that up. I mean, I remember it vaguely. That's wonderful. And that's, you know, that is such an sort of off track. I mean, it's not one of the, you know, sort of
not a mainstream
Sinatra
one, no.
thing. That's lovely. That's wonderful. Well, yet the Sun, we just had the Sons of the Copper Beaches in Philadelphia and I was asked again to do a toast to Violet Hunter. And so I sang an abbreviated version of my toast to the tune of, Bird in a Gilded Cage. She's only a girl who is quite naive. I love to do those singing toasts.
Oh, that's great. Well, maybe you and I could team up and do like Sinatra duets. Interestingly, when he recorded that duets album, he was actually remote from all of the other singers that teamed up with him, just as you and I are remote.
Well, I'd love to do that with you. Tony Bennett, of course, just did his duet album within the last year or so, but had everybody in the studio.
Hey, that's great. That's the Alec Baldwin, Tony Bennett.
The Alec Baldwin, yeah.
That's great.
That's great. That'd be a good ringtone.
Well, I think we have wasted enough time of our very patient and loyal listeners, and we thank you once again for being with us. And I guess if you have any ideas for songs that we can bastardize, or other topics that you'd like to hear us discuss here on I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, we're always happy to hear from you.
Yes, we are. Give us a call, please. Give us a call. And leave us a comment. We'll play it on the show, 774-221-READ, 774-221-7323.
Of course, you can head to ihearofsherlock.com, leave a comment directly on our page, or, of course, the ever-popular Facebook, facebook.com/ihearofsherlock. You can comment on any of the posts there. You can share posts on our wall on Facebook if there's something that you find of interest, and post it on there for all to see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that gets us to the point where the only thing left to say is you are definitely Scott Monty.
And the only other thing left to say must invariably be Bert Wolder.
Oh, man, you amaze me.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, the game's afoot.
You know, I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I'm neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.